On the eve of the Sweet 16 for LSU, the middleman in the Will Wade wiretap has been revealed. Impeccable timing. What's up with that? Can LSU's Zach Hess slow down the Mississippi State offensive juggernaut? And take me out to the ball game, baby. This is what it's all about. Opening day, Major League Baseball, today, Thursday, March 28th, 2019.
Seven-point game as George wriggles back along the right side of the lane. Throws home over the backboard, a seven-footer. It counts because Matthews hacked him in the act. PG-13 has Matthews with an H in the game, a horse on that hoisted hit, and he's got 30 points on the night in 35 minutes.
Four minutes gone by fourth quarter. KD on the right side, working on Kamoko. KD backs up three-point line, takes a three off the dribble. 9 for 9 is Kevin Durant, and he doubles the Warriors' lead to 98-92. Durant fakes, leans back, jumper, 10 for 10. Kevin Durant with a two for the right side. It's 100-92.
Way to a 12 for 13 shooting performance. Kevin Durant, efficient, effective. And the Golden State Warriors get another win. Good afternoon and welcome. It's great to be with you. Hope you're having a great, great Thursday. It's the 28th day of March. My main man, CD, producer extraordinaire, back in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios, all within the friendly confines of Delta Media, KLWB, and here on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. You can call us always, 337-706-0111. Email me, askjordy, J-O-R-D-Y, at gmail.com. Follow on Twitter, at JHS1037. Jordy Helpert Show, 1037, all right? Very simple, very simple. We're going to take you through all kinds of areas of our great country today. We're going to start off by heading to Starkville, Mississippi. Yes, it's a beautiful little village. We're going to get the very, very latest on LSU baseball as they get ready to take on Mississippi State. Not a hotter team in America than what's happening in Starkville. Wilson Alexander of The Advocate will join us live from Starkville for a preview and what Zach Hess is facing. Then we'll go from Starkville. We'll head up east. We'll go to our nation's capital. And John Brady, the former coach at LSU, current color commentator on the LSU Sports Radio Network, will join us for an update on LSU. They've had their practice already. They've met with Senator Scalise, several of the players in the hotel. Now they're resting, relaxing, a lot of film study, a lot of mental preparation. And we'll get the very latest on LSU. That's just our number one. I don't want to put too much on your plate. We'll talk about our number two later on. But we begin, and I don't understand the timing of things, but Yahoo Sports has come out again. They've come out again, and they have revealed who the middleman was that Will Wade was talking about on these wiretapped phone calls to Christian Dawkins, and that happens to be Baton Rouge native Shannon Foreman. I know Shannon Foreman. If you deal with basketball in the city of Baton Rouge, you know who Shannon Foreman is. Wade referred to Shannon as the intermediary for his strong-ass offer for a recruit, purportedly Javonte Smart. Javonte Smart says he's known Foreman most of his life. He was a coach. He's my mentor. He's real close to me, and he looks out for me. He's been there most of my life. When I really got into basketball, he was there for me. When I started to focus on basketball, he was always there for me. When asked about Wade's reference to Foreman on the FBI wiretap, Smart said, I don't know about that. I don't have any comment about that. An LSU spokesman said that Smart's playing status for LSU's game on Friday remains unchanged. He'll be ready to go. LSU declined comment to both Yahoo and others. And Shannon Foreman said it's just not a good time. It's not a good time to talk about stuff. So I don't understand what this is all about. Why here? Why now? It just, again, takes away the focus from what really matters, and that's those kids on the court. And they're going to have their hands full against Michigan State. But it's just, it's amazing how all of a sudden a little leak comes out here. And Yahoo Sports gets it. I don't know who they've got in, on the inside, but isn't it amazing how this stuff happens when it happens? Do you see a coincidence here? I mean, seriously. So now these players are going to be asked, the coach is going to be asked about this. And it just irks me to no end. It irks me. It just does. Tony Benford said, let's see. I'm trying to find out more about this story. But Tony Benford, yeah, I met Shannon Foreman, absolutely. And that he has a relationship with Javonte Smart. On the wiretap, Wade said he went to Foreman with a blank strong-ass offer about a month ago. Blank strong. The problem was, I know why I didn't take it now. It was tilted toward the family a little bit. It was tilted toward taking care of the mom, taking care of the kid, like it was tilted towards that. Now I know for a fact he didn't explain everything to the mom. I know now he didn't get enough of the piece of the pie in the deal. So, I just don't get it. But, hey, that ought to play right up at LSU's wheelhouse because they have been under the microscope. They have faced adversity time and time and time again. It's almost as though when they step between the white lines, that's their escape from everything. And they just let it go. And they play loose. And they play free. And they play with fun and let it rip. Let it rip. All right, we'll get into that much, much more coming up in this hour with John Brady. So also coming up on the show, LSU has played Florida three times. Florida has played Michigan State once. We'll get a similarity from someone who watched the Gators play both of these Sweet 16 teams, and we'll get his perspective of things in hour number two. Plus, we'll get more on Michigan State as well. We're heavy loaded hoops. Why not? I know. It's the start of the baseball season. I know the Astros are getting ready to get it all started today against the Tampa Bay Rays. I know that, and it's going to be wonderful. Absolutely. But it's a long season ahead. And in college basketball, it's now or never. It's now or never. And so we're going to focus in on that. All right, bottom of the sixth, the Yankees. Everybody's high on the Yankees this year. They lead the Baltimore Orioles 6-2. Top of the eighth, the Mets with a one-zip lead over Washington. In the bottom of the fourth, Milwaukee over my St. Louis Cardinals 4-3. So keep an eye out. We'll keep you updated all afternoon long, but we'll take our first time out of the day. We are presented by Hooters, and Hooters is on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway, and you've got to go see it. It is so fresh, so new. The renovation went off just to perfection, and now you got more TVs to look at. You've got more beers on tap. You got $15, we'll get you 15 wings and a pitcher of domestic beer each and every day. And you bring your team in their unis, you got 40 free wings, compliments of Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. Major League Baseball, March Madness, LSU Baseball, they'll have it all right there at Hooters. When we come back, college baseball, big one, Starkville, Mississippi. LSU against Mississippi State, a preview coming your way next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. We get the busy week of sports underway tonight. LSU versus Mississippi State, Duty Noble Field in Starkville, Mississippi. State is tied with LSU and Auburn in the SEC West Division standings at 4-2, one game behind Texas A&M and Arkansas. But I get a feeling there's a different feel for how State is playing as compared to how LSU is playing. Wilson Alexander does a tremendous job for the Baton Rouge Advocate covering the LSU baseball Tigers. He's in Starkville joining us now. Wilson, thanks for the time, buddy. How are you?
I'm all right. Well, almost in Starkville.
Almost. Okay. Heading that way. I understand. Glad to take some of the monotony out of the drive for you. Would that be a safe assessment? They're probably feeling a lot better in Starkville about the 4-2 Bulldogs than they are in Baton Rouge about the 4-2 Tigers?
I think that's a safe assessment to make. I mean, Mississippi State is pretty much number two in the country by most of the polls, number four by collegiate baseball. That's as low as they get. And LSU's looking at itself. Even Zach Hess has been looking at them because he said, you know, we're in the back half of the top 25 and we're in danger of falling out. And so they're aware of the way these two teams have been playing. And, I mean, it's impressive the numbers that Mississippi State put up last weekend against Auburn. I mean, wow.
Yeah, I mean, they've scored 53 runs in their last three games, including like 25 in one game against Auburn. They lead the league in batting with .327. My gosh, could maybe LSU steal some of their bats or something? Because LSU's been anemic. Something.
Yeah, that's LSU could definitely use a couple bats, and that's something that's probably the biggest concern of this team right now.
No question about it. Tell me what. You know, these players-only meetings, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work. But obviously LSU held one after that two-zip shutout loss to McNeese State out in the outfield, players only for about 20 minutes. What have you learned from that meeting? What have you gotten out of that?
Well, it was interesting just because normally something like that is held closed doors, you know, back right inside the depths of the stadium. And they're just out in the outfield because after a game such as that, Coach Maneri just didn't have a lot to say in the immediate aftermath of the game to his team. Like, you know, he wasn't going to pile on. He knew how they were feeling. And in that moment, you know, the players took over, which is what he would want to see anyway, because you need leadership within the ranks. And Clay Moffitt really spearheaded that. I mean, we could see him just, you know, we're standing outside the dugout waiting to talk to a couple guys, and he's hitting himself in the head over and over and, like, screaming and pointing at, like, past the outfield. And I mean, it was just a display of emotion that, I mean, you don't often see just out in the outfield. I think they came away with that from that. Just, you know, it's sort of, I don't know if it's going to end up leading to wins this weekend because you're playing such a good Mississippi State team, but they just want to, like, at least get out there and show that they're competitive, because they just did not compete at all against McNeese.
When you compete in football, you're running to the ball, you're just throwing your body into it. In basketball, you're rebounding, you're driving the ball to the basket, you're getting down and getting after it defensively. When they talk about competing in baseball, what does that mean?
I think the first thing it means, especially with this team right now, is competitive at bat. So they're swinging a lot early in the count. There's been different points this season where they've seemed to kind of give up late. Oh, they're like down 0-2. That happened after one of the games, and it's making the pitcher throw perfect pitches. And if they're not going to throw perfect pitches, then at least, you know, you're going to walk or something, or they're going to make a mistake that you can capitalize on. And it's just making the other team work more for a win than they are right now.
Wilson Alexander, the Baton Rouge Advocate, kind enough to join us. Golly, it's like early on the hitting was everything. The pitching was non-existent. Now that's flipped. I mean, you couldn't ask for more from Zach Hess and Cole Henry, right? You just couldn't.
No. I mean, Zach Hess, it would be unrealistic to ask more. Zach Hess was just phenomenal last Friday at Georgia. And if he puts up a similar outing today, then they'll have a chance. On the opposite side, Mississippi State trots out Ethan Small, who's been excellent, and he's from the left side, which worries Paul Maneri right now because of the lack of right-handed production that LSU's gotten. But yeah, I mean, Zach and Cole have been just excellent in their last couple of starts.
What did they do differently the last couple of starts that was just baffling early on in the season, particularly with Zach Hess? Was it simple as getting ahead in the count and making the batters have to guess a little bit? Is that safe to say?
I think with Zach, I was at Georgia and I was talking. I asked him, why he had the last two starts been so much better. He said part of it is, he did have that groin injury to open up the year, and that was kind of throwing him off. He wasn't able to have his sort of normal amount of preparation. And then there was at Texas, it was for the first few starts, it was always something. So first was the groin injury, and then at Texas he gets a line drive straight to his pitching arm. It's 100 miles an hour. And, so he sort of put those nicks and bruises behind him, and that's been a big part of it. And now he's also throwing his slider much better than he was at the beginning of the year. That slider of his is a really good pitch when it's on. And so he's been able to mix pitches well. And I think that's what Zach is doing really well right now. He's also locating his fastball.
Sunday, who's is it? Eric Walker, and is this going to be another committee thing, or do they feel confident now that Walker can get them 5-6 innings?
Well, Walker went 5 at Georgia, so I definitely think that he can do that again. I mean, it was just a few starts ago after I think he went 4 1/3 innings that Paul had been saying that Eric's not back to full strength yet; he's still kind of getting past Tommy John. And Eric was like, well, I actually feel really good. I think I can go deeper in games. And then we saw that a little bit at Georgia when he went 5. And they pulled him once he got into some trouble. So I think for Eric, it's not so much now going deep into games, just from a pitch count perspective. It's more getting deep because he's throwing well and using all of his stuff. His velocity has never been a strong suit of his, so he's got to really locate his pitch as well. And if he's doing that, then he can go pretty deep into it.
You look at Zach Hess's numbers, a 2-1, 2.97 ERA in 33 and a third innings. He's had 36 strikeouts, 17 walks. His competitor, junior left-hander, Ethan Small, 36 innings pitched, 58 strikeouts, only 8 walks. So here we go, another lefty. That can bring it. So this, I tell you, they may play well, but it just may not be well enough. This state team's loaded.
Yeah, they are, especially for tonight and tomorrow, because not only you have Ethan Small, then you have JT Ginn, this freshman who was a first-round draft pick and somehow got him to campus.
Wow.
He's been incredible, too. So runs are going to come at a premium. So that's kind of why, right now, this is a really pivotal point of the season for LSU. It's okay, can your offense wake up enough to at least not just hand state the game, show that you can compete with the other top teams in the country.
Yeah. To your point, again, 49 strikeouts, only 4 free passes. LSU came in as the number one ranked team in the country. What's happened in your opinion? I mean, why was everybody so high on them? I know it's on paper and you got to go play the game, but obviously, there's talent on this team. What's been the biggest bugaboo, in your opinion?
Well, it's sort of what you mentioned earlier. what they were saying yesterday when we were talking to the players and Coach Maneri and everything was that they haven't been able to get on the same page at one time. Like earlier in the year, the hitting was great and the pitching was bad, and now the pitching's great and the hitting's bad. So they haven't been able to line those two things up, which obviously is you kind of need to do. And that's really it, because they've said they're confident in this, that if they can get those two things going at the same time, then they are one of the top teams in the country. Right. They just haven't done that yet.
Are we going to have a new closer this weekend?
I don't know. We'll see. It was interesting. I mean, at Georgia, they brought in Fontenot after Peterson. So I haven't asked Paul about that outright yet, but I think it would be something to keep an eye on, how they use Fontenot and how they use Peterson.
Okay. A lot of injured pitchers, man. I don't understand it. What's the latest on Justin Hill? Such a promising start, and then here we go again.
Well, Jaden Hill, yeah.
Jaden Hill.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I mean, he's just out. He's still out right now. I mean, they had an MRI. The results came back fine, but this MRI result still didn't, you know, present a reason for the arm soreness. So he's out indefinitely. I mean, there's really no timetable for his return, which is a big hit to this pitching staff, all those arm soreness, because that came into the year. You mentioned one of the reasons for them being at one of the top teams was all these pitchers, and now most of those pitchers are sidelined.
Yeah. Mm. You ever been to this stadium, this ballpark? It's supposed to be really, really cool. Ought to be fun.
I have not. I know. Paul's excited to see the additions, too. I was talking to him about it and just all these renovations that they've made. It should be a really electric atmosphere all weekend.
I heard you're staying in one of those suites above left field. So good for you, man. I'm glad the Advocate is sparing no expense for you. Good deal. Yeah. Oh, the laugh and the chuckle. Wilson Alexander, thanks for the time, buddy. I appreciate it. And we'll see. This is a pivotal time in the series, and they're facing a really good team. We'll see what happens, buddy. Thank you. We'll look forward to all your reports on theadvocate.com. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Y'all have a great day.
All right, you too. So there you have it. So Zach Hess against Ethan Small today. Advantage Small. If you just look at the numbers, all right, just look at the numbers. Advantage Small. Friday, Cole Henry against JT Ginn. You look at the numbers. Ginn is 6-0 with a 2.58 ERA and 38 in the third innings pitched, 49 strikeouts and 4 free passes. Advantage Mississippi State. State has not announced their Saturday starter. Excuse me. Eric Walker will go to LSU. We'll have Thursday's game here on 103.7 The Game. We'll have Saturday's game here on 103.7 The Game. Unfortunately, Friday, same time as the hoop game. So there you have it. Speaking of hoops, we'll head out to D.C. John Brady next. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Continuing coverage of NCAA tournament play. The LSU Tigers, of course, as we all know, in our nation's capital, for Friday's Sweet 16 matchup with the Michigan State Spartans. We've had him on all year long, and we have been very blessed to do so. John Brady, the color analyst on the LSU Sports Radio Network and a veteran of NCAA tournament games, kind enough to join us yet again. John, how are you, my man? Happy Thursday afternoon.
Yes, sir. Good to be here. Glad to have me on. Appreciate it.
Well, you taking a walk? Have you seen some of the – what a great city, right? I mean, there's so much to do. You had a chance to go and look around a little bit?
Well, Chris Blair and I went to practice today with the team, and we walked back from the arena to the hotel, and we wound up walking 3.5, almost 4 miles.
We got a little exercise.
We kind of got semi-lost, actually.
Hey, how did practice go?
Practice was really good. We worked a lot on getting back in transition, trying to take Michigan State out of their transition, which they rely on a great deal because of their point guard. And then there were some suggestions and ideas they worked on about how to guard their point guard off of ball screens, containing him or doubling him. Similar to what, you know, I would do with Tremont Waters. But certainly they worked on it today and had a good plan. The players were attentive. They were flying around up and down the floor. They worked defensively in the half court. And then I think LSU, it looks to me like we're going to try and push the ball and try to get easy baskets on them as well.
Good plan. Good plan. When you look at the matchup and you study this and you study numbers and you watch the tapes and all, what stands out to you about Michigan State?
Well, they're so efficient on both ends of the floor. If you look at their numbers defensively, 39% field goals they give, 31% from the three-point line. They out-rebound their opponents by 7 or 8. They don't turn the ball over. They play exceptional defense without fouling, and I think that's going to be one of the things that we're going to see if we can do. Can we get to the foul line? We've made over 120 or 30 free throws, somewhere in that number, more than Michigan State, and mm-hmm. we're going to need the foul line against this team. And also, one of the strengths of our team is offensive rebounding, and Tom Izzo is a rebounding emphasis coach. So if they keep us off the offensive board and we can't get to the foul line, we're going to have to shoot a decent field goal percentage, or at least shoot a better field goal percentage than Michigan State to win the game.
John Brady from Washington, D.C. The point guards on both teams are so, so important. They can ill afford to get either one of them in foul trouble. With that being said, you know, do you put Tremont Waters on Cassius Winston, or do you put a bigger guard like a Skylar Mays and then bring Javonte Smart in off the bench to guard him, to kind of take some of that pressure off of Waters because he's got so much pressure on the other end?
Yeah, I think that Skylar's going to probably do the majority of defending, but I think sometimes on a – they screen a lot of ball on guard screens, and we will switch that, it seems to me, what I saw today. But I think Skylar with Javonte is the plan, and have Tremont guard one of the guards that are off the ball a little bit to not as put much stress on him and keep him out of foul trouble. But I think our if we happen to get Tremont in foul trouble or their point guard got in foul trouble, I think it will affect them more than us because I like Javonte on the ball with us from time to time, particularly in his ability to push it up the floor quickly.
John, don't you think, to me, it seemed like, I mean, if you could have scripted it, I don't think you could any better, having to play Maryland, another Big Ten team. That was a big, physical basketball team. That's going to prep you for Michigan State, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I've said all along. I think that game against Maryland was a good prep, a good prelim for this game against Michigan State. I think Michigan State has a better point guard, although Maryland's was pretty good.
Yeah.
But Michigan State shoots a little bit better. They defend a little bit better. But Mark Turgeon, the coach at Maryland, is a defending, rebounding type of guy. And certainly Tom Izzo is that way. So it was a good preliminary game for us to play in preparation for Michigan State.
Izzo, been there, done that, Hall of Fame coach. I hate to sound this way, but look, I played when Bobby Knight was coaching, and, man, he intimidates officials. Izzo kind of does the same thing. They seem to get more calls going their way. Can Tony Benford talk to those officials and say, look, come on now, what would you do in that scenario? Anything?
Well, I remember playing Duke in Atlanta when they were number one in the country, and some guy named Krzyzewski was the coach.
Pretty good.
Yeah, and with about 6 or 7 minutes to go, that's when Krzyzewski, if the game is close, really tries to influence the officials. And I told those guys, when they would come by the bench, I said, now, look, that guy down there named Krzyzewski, you might have heard of him. He's going to start trying to get on your ass. So I'm going to see if you can bow up and call this thing right down
baby.
The stretch. So,
that a baby.
You know, so I wanted to make sure I put that on him and to challenge him, you know, to do it right and be fair. And
yeah.
But I think these officials will be fine. You know, these officials are trying to work the Final Four, and they're graded right. on every game. And the more they work, the better, the more money they make. So I think they're going. They'll give us a fair shake. I hate to think they would not, and there's some kind of conspiracy or plan to keep us from winning. And I just can't bring myself going down a road like that. But hopefully,
no, me neither. Me neither.
Yeah, hopefully the last 5 minutes, if it's close and we've got the game workable, that they do us the right job and blow the whistle in the right way.
Yeah, but you know some of those coaches, they tend to get them sometimes. It's
just, I know,
just
they try.
That pedigree,
they try.
It works. You know that.
That's right. Yeah, I do know that.
John Brady in D.C., nation's capital. Where do you attack this Michigan State team? They're very good. They're you know, fundamentally sound. As you said, they defend without fouling. What would you – how do you attack them?
Well, we're going to try to see if we can get some easy baskets on this team and try to get it out quick and see if we can score quick. And if they take us out of transition from time to time, we have to go to the half court. I would certainly see how they guard us in the post, and okay. I'd certainly throw it in there to collapse the defense first and early on, and see how they're going to defend the post. If they're going to double team it, if they're going to drop somebody on Nas Reed, how are they going to defend Bigby Williams when he catches down low? Are they going to play us one on one, and then play off of that? And I think a lot of times. You can adjust your offense by how they guard the postman. You throw it in there. If it's a single deal, then you tell your postman to go to work. If they double him, then you rotate the floor and try to kick it cross court and make one more pass and shoot it or drive it off of one pass. And they worked on that a little bit today about throwing the ball to the post, moving the perimeters around and kicking the ball out and making the extra pass. They did that this morning. So the prep was good. The players were attentive. I think they're excited about playing and looking forward to playing a good team, a well-coached team, a team that's real efficient on both ends of the floor, that's not going to beat itself. And I'm looking – I think it's going to be, Jordy, a really classic college basketball game to watch.
CBS loves LSU. They give you drama, and they'll figure out a way to keep it close. I mean, it's killing me, John. It's killing me.
There's a storyline. There's a storyline with the Tigers. You know, it just kind of it's kind of what LSU is from time to time. I guess we always have something going on in South Louisiana.
We are a gumbo, right? Well, a little of this, a little of that. You change the ingredients every time you do it, but hopefully at the end it comes out tasting sweet. And so far, so good.
Well, this team has been really resilient, and you've got to credit not only the assistant coaches, but really I credit these players for what
Absolutely.
All they've been through, the ups and downs, the ins and outs, and how this season started tragically, and then how it came, and Coach Wade not being here, all of those things that have gone on with this team. This team has become a close-knit unit. They're relaxed, but yet they're serious. They understand the task at hand, and I'll be surprised if this isn't a really excellent basketball game to watch tomorrow.
I love, again, we talked about it before, but Coach Benford went to Tremont Waters and said, look, man, help me. All right, let me help you. You help me. And Trey says, I got some rope, man. He's giving me some freedom. And you could, as a player, what else could you ask for a coach that has the ultimate confidence and faith in you to get the job done? And he certainly showed it down the stretch against Maryland. But I got to go back. Skylar Mays is so good, isn't he? I mean, he makes free throws, but that jump shot, that three-pointer he made, going for a two-for-one scenario, you don't see that very often in college basketball. That was just such a smart play and executed to perfection.
Well, Skylar Mays has been a steady influence on this team all year long. He's not a verbal guy. He leads by example.
Yeah.
When he's similar in some ways to Daryl Mitchell. You know, when he says something, they're going to listen because he doesn't talk all the time, and he's not just saying things that have no meaning. When Skylar speaks, they listen. He's a character guy. You know what you're getting. He makes big plays. And if LSU can make enough three-pointers tomorrow night, not a bunch, just make six or so during the course of that game and make them at the right time, it will surely enhance our chances to win this game, in my opinion.
All right. We always ask you this, and we're not going to, you know, people will forget before the game, so you'll be able to say it again. Give me your thoughts on what LSU is going to have to do to win this thing and advance to the Elite Eight.
Well, I think we need to win the foul line. We need to make more free throws than Michigan State makes. If we can win that stat based on how they don't allow opponents to get to the foul line, that would be a plus for us. We need to play this team even on the board. You know, we need to, because they're a strong rebounding team. We've become a strong rebounding team throughout the course of the year. We need to play them even on the board. And then, particularly with as efficient a team as Michigan State is, we've got to be close in the field goal stat, and it would sure be nice for us to be able to win the field goal stat. And if we can do those three things, I think with 5 minutes to go, it's going to be a coin flip, and then it's going to come down to, like it did against Maryland, right, what player makes the right play at the right time to help us win the game.
The bigger, the higher the score, the more advantage to LSU. If it's down in the low 70s and 60s, is that an advantage to Michigan State, or is that even a point?
Well, it is a point. I think the way both teams are defending now, I think it's going to be a low 70s, high 60 game, much like the Maryland game. I don't think this game's going to get up in the 80s. I don't think Michigan State, they defend too well for it to get that high. So I think a low 70s, high 60s game will be fine for LSU, because they've proven over the last couple of games or so that they can win, you know, when the pace is like that.
Sounds good. I was in that building. They used to call it the Verizon Center. I saw Michael Jordan drop 45 when he was at the tail end of his career with the Wizards, believe it or not.
Yes.
You talk about a weird, weird experience. But it's a beautiful venue. It's a great, great place to play a basketball game. And hopefully the rims are good and the Tigers can shoot it. Because there was that one goal, that one side of the court in Jacksonville, nobody could make a bucket. What was that all about?
I don't know. I guess it was the one that we played against in the second half, I suppose.
Yes.
I don't know. I didn't really notice that. But now that you said it, I think there was a little something different on either end of the floor. I think teams, they probably defend better the second half than they do the first, maybe. I don't know. But we'll see tomorrow. It's going to be a
true
good
shooter,
game.
A true shooter says the backdrop was different. Man, it was bad or something. I don't know. I don't know. Well, all right. Well, go make the best of your time. And what does LSU do the rest of the day?
Well, they're just going to take off the rest of the day. We practiced. I think they have a film session this afternoon when they eat dinner at about 5 o'clock or 6. They're going to have a film session and a walkthrough in the hotel, in the meeting room downstairs. But they're just going to take it easy, relax, and do more mental preparation work with tape this evening, because I think the physical practice, the hour and 20 minutes today, was enough to get them ready to play tomorrow.
John, I can't thank you enough for your time, but I hope we can do this again next week, man, if you know what I mean.
That would be fun. That would be remarkable.
Right, take care, my friend. Thank you, John.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
John Brady in Washington, D.C. for the very latest on the Tigers. Back to wrap up hour number one after this.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever, as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Minutes after the hour, let's update you. Middle of the eighth in Major League Baseball, opening day. Yankees lead the Orioles 6-2. Bottom of the ninth, Mets shutting out Washington 2-0. Two outs in the ballgame, one to go. Middle of the sixth, Milwaukee 5, St. Louis 3. In the top of the third, Aaron Nola and the Phillies tied up with the Braves at one apiece. We're about 7 minutes away from the start of the Astros and the Tampa Bay Rays. So stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, in D.C., Tony Benford, the interim head coach for LSU basketball, talked about his Tigers against the Michigan State Spartans. He talked about the keys to beating Sparty.
They're as good as anybody in the country with their offense. They're very efficient, and also defensively. The main thing you got to do with them is you got to do a great job in your transition defense. You got to keep them out of transition. They score 30% of their points in transition, and we try to we got to get back and make them play against our set defense. And then offensively, we got to really execute because their defense, they're number three in the country in field goal percentage defense, and scoring defense are top 20. So we're going to have to do a great job on our offense and our defense. Offense got to help our defense. So we're looking forward to challenge. We had a great practice today. We'll go again in the morning, and we'll do a lot of film work, and we'll be prepared on Friday.
All right. Cassius Winston is the stick that stirs the drink for Michigan State, and Coach Benford was very high in his praise for the Big Ten Player of the Year.
Well, obviously they have a great player, player of the year in the league, Cassius Winston. He's really talented. He reminds me, when I was at Marquette, you guys, Kemba Walker, who's with the Charlotte Hornets, he reminds me of Kemba, and his ability to score at all three levels. They put a lot of pressure on the defense in transition. And
Kemba Walker, you remember that run he had in the NCAA tournament for Connecticut? Holy cow. So you got to keep an eye on Cassius Winston. You also have to keep an eye on the Hall of Fame coach-to-be, and that is Tom Izzo. He's been to so many of these Sweet 16s. He's got a national championship. He's terrific at what he does. He coaches his way, tough, hard-nosed, physical. Here's Coach Benford on his counterpart.
I got much respect for Coach Izzo. Obviously, his success speaks for itself. And, our staff is looking forward to preparing our guys. And it's not going to be us against Coach. We'll just prepare our guys the best we can and, make game and in-game adjust whatever we got to do to just have our guys ready to play.
There you go. Well said. And it's going to be very interesting. I don't know what's going to happen with LSU and Will Wade. I have a feeling about what's going on here, but you never know. I'm going to let that play out, but there'll be eyes watching Tony Benford in this game and to see how he handles it. He handled the late game. You wanted to see what would happen when adversity struck, and LSU had the big lead against Maryland, gave it up, got it back, and they drew up the right play down the stretch. So Benford's starting to feel a lot more comfortable in his position, and it's a three-headed circus with Benford and Heyer and Armstrong. So they all have done a wonderful job. Now they're facing their toughest test yet. This is a tremendous coach who knows what he's doing. He's been there. He's done that. So a lot of eyes will be on Benford. He wants to be a head coach again, obviously. And this is a great testing ground for him. So we will see. We will have more on this LSU basketball game against Michigan State in hour number two. We'll have our Hot Topics segment. Graham Hall will join us from the Gainesville Sun. The Florida Gators play both LSU and Michigan State. So we'll get his viewpoint on what he saw and who has the advantage. It's all coming your way. Hour number two, the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. It's a final. The Mets, opening day win, shut out the Senators 2-0. We'll be back.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
All right, hour number two of two, and away we go on this Thursday, March 28th, the year 2019. Opening day for Major League Baseball, one final in the book. The Mets beat the Washington Senators 2-0, and they're underway. Houston and the Tampa Bay Rays as the Astros try to get back and win themselves another World Series. Yes, indeed. We got LSU baseball in Starkville tonight, 6 o'clock first pitch, pregame show at 5:30. And a lot to talk about in this hour. So without further ado, let's get busy. Time to take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Good afternoon, Mr. Domain. How are you, sir?
I am doing fantastic, Jordy. It All is right. opening day. How can I not be excited? It's a new season of baseball. Yep. I understand we're in the throes of the Sweet 16, but whenever you get baseball getting kickstarted, especially Major League Baseball, it is exciting.
Love it.
Cannot wait to see what the Astros do and all the other teams do. I might as well get your way too early prediction out of the way right now, Jordy. Who do you think is going to wind up in the World Series?
Well, I'm going to speak selfishly. I'm going to take the St. Louis Cardinals. I just got a funny feeling it's the Yankees' year. I don't know why, but I got a feeling. But I'm hoping. My perfect dream scenario would be the Cardinals and the Astros. So let's go with that. What the heck?
I'd be down with that as well. A little renewing of the NL Central rivalry. Would love that.
Yes, yes.
But it doesn't look too hot right now for those Cardinals right now. 5-3.
5-3, end of the six, but it's early, baby. Come on.
It's early.
Redbirds don't quit. Come on.
161 games to go after this, so obviously a lot of things could change. Well, we're talking about a season getting started. We're nearing the end of the NBA season, Jordy. And Devin Booker has been phenomenal this season with two straight 50-point games. But this team keeps losing. And it got me thinking, Jordy, that's a horrible thing to do to begin with. That being said, I got to think, if you were still playing nowadays, would you rather score 50 points and lose or put up a paltry 17 to 20 points and your team wins?
17 to 20 and win. Losing is no fun, particularly in that league. It's so long. The travel is so brutal. No, give me the 20 and a W. Keep the 50 and the loss. I could care less.
I'm with you as well, Jordy, because how can you not just want to win every single game? And if you can wind up averaging a decent amount and you can help your team win rather than, oh, wait, it's all on you, that winds up helping out your team a lot more down the line. You can up being a team that's in contention.
You see how the Pelicans are tanking? I mean, they finally listened. I mean, they are awful.
No, they finally learned how to tank.
They've learned how to tank. They are awful. My gosh, and I love it. I love every second of it.
I know you do, Jordy. I know you do. But then again, it seems like it's just too little too late to try and make a lot of impact and a lot of wave whenever the ping pong balls are jumping up and down, because it is a very low percentage to wind up getting the number one pick. At best, I think you're probably going to wind up hoping for like a top four or five pick.
That'd be great. That would be sensational. You can get somebody, or you can dabble that a little bit and put that with Anthony Davis and get somebody really – just get it. Go low. Go low, baby. Keep losing. Keep losing.
Go low. I absolutely love it, Jordy. And I know you're going to be heading out tomorrow, right, Jordy?
I'm heading to D.C., baby.
Heading to our nation's capital to see that Sweet 16 matchup between LSU and Michigan State. And, you know, you've traveled all over the place, especially back when you were the New Orleans Hornets as part of the broadcast team.
Right.
So what city was your favorite to travel to?
Well, I mean, they all have unique qualities, and I love them all. But my favorite, to be quite honest with you, is where they no longer have an NBA team. That was Seattle. I love that city. It had everything. I loved it. New York was great, but too crowded, too much traffic. L.A., too, God, too much traffic. But I love Seattle. I love Miami. I love them all, man. They all great cities. This country's great. But give me Seattle over all the rest. Save our Sonics, baby. Save the Sonics.
Bring them back.
But don't bring the Pelicans to Seattle because Gail Benson said, I will never, ever sell the team. So I believe you, baby. I believe you.
Yeah, and then we get like a $2 billion offer from Russell Wilson and Sierra. And basically, Gail Benson's like, you know what? Cool. Take it. Take it.
Come on now. Come on.
$2 billion, Jordy.
She's not going to do it. She's not going to do it.
I don't know. Sometimes money talks.
I mean, how much can she spend? Seriously. I mean, come on. She's a very attractive woman.
Yeah.
She is up in her age. How much more does she need? She doesn't. She's not selling, baby. She wants to win on both sides of Dave Dixon Drive. There you go.
You got to think, Jordy. You want to be able to make it. It's not about making a whole lot of money, but guess what? You're going to be getting well above market value, hypothetically, $2
million. I know.
$2 billion, excuse me. So you want to get well above it. You kind of have to think about it from that perspective. Definitely would be a strong-ass offer, Jordy. Speaking of which, Jordy, we're seeing more and more reports come out from Yahoo Sports. And how convenient is it, Jordy, that we're talking about these Yahoo Sports reports just before the Sweet 16? It feels like they're just henpecking their time. They have a calendar. Like, what's his name has a calendar where it says more news about Will Wade, more news about Will Wade, and all the other days are left blank.
And nobody's really running with this thing because it's nothing. It means, so what? Okay, there's the guy's name. Okay, what does it mean? It is rather impeccable timing on Yahoo's time frame. I laugh at it. I laugh at it. I think, I hope it galvanizes this basketball team even more, just like it has prior. So let them say what they want. I do believe that when they step on that court, that is the player's release valve. That is their safe haven. That's where they go and do their thing. They don't have to talk to anybody but themselves. They're unified together. I'm all for it. But it's very, very, very suspicious how this comes out when it comes out. It's amazing.
I have to agree with you, Jordy. It definitely is a little weird. But looking over the NFL for a minute, an anonymous NFL exec has come out saying that they're worried that Antonio Brown forcing a trade for the Pittsburgh Steelers could be setting a dangerous precedent others might try to follow. Do you think it winds up becoming a big deal, especially with the New Orleans Saints? Because we know Michael Thomas, the star wide receiver, his contract's going to be coming up after the end of this season, and they're going to wind up trying to renegotiate with him in the 2020 offseason. This makes things a little bit more interesting because he could wind up saying, y'all aren't going to pay me enough, then you have to trade me.
Well, look what's happened. I mean, they see what happens in the NBA. They see what's happened in Major League Baseball. And if you're that good, they want their piece of the pie as well. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see more and more of these kind of demands. We've seen it. Eli Manning says, I'm not playing out there in San Diego. I want to play in New York. So he said, don't draft me. So we've seen this time and time again in certain instances. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if this happens more and more often.
And I think it will, Jordy. Last one here. Obviously, I won't talk to you on Friday. You'll be out in D.C. getting ready to enjoy a great ball game. So why not give me a prediction, Jordy? LSU, Michigan State, who you got?
LSU's going to avenge that 1979 loss to Michigan State. And I'm going to take LSU. Why the heck not? I'm going to take them 72-69.
Nice.
Go for the Tigers and let's go happen. Let's go make it happen. We'll find out what Graham Hall has to say about that when we come back. But of course, Hot Topics brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef with you wherever you go, because I promise you, everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. More NCAA hoops talk. Tigers, Spartans next.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holford Show on 103.7 The Game.
We'll be right back. we welcome you back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on this Thursday, March 28th. We're finally getting a little bit closer to the Sweet 16 showdown between LSU and Michigan State. They've had a common opponent this season, the Florida Gators. Yes, the Gators took on Michigan State earlier this year. Spartans win it by 4-63-59. And we know LSU and Florida played three times, the Gators winning twice. But on average, the point differential in all three games averaged out to 3 points. So both games, both teams played the Gators very, very closely. So I thought we'd call up our good friend from the Gainesville Sun, Graham Hall, to kind of give us his perspective as an unbiased observer of both clubs and where he sees this game going. So, Graham, good afternoon, buddy. How are things in Gainesville?
Hey, Jordy. Things are going great, and thanks for having me on. This is one of those Michigan – this Michigan State game is one of those ones that Florida would probably like to have back, considering it came so early in the season and at a time when they really didn't know how to close games. They were up, actually, at one point against Michigan State, and they kept it within 4-6 points for most of the way, and that was really early before freshmen like Noah Locke and Keontae Johnson really emerged right for Florida. So certainly, you know, and LSU fans know that this is a Florida team that really did peak in February. So if you look at the matchup between them, they do a lot of things very differently. And I think the X factor for LSU has got to be Naz Reid, because Michigan State, one of the best defensive rebounding teams in the NCAA, and Tom Izzo will obviously have them on their A game, considering you look at him, he's 9-4 in Sweet 16 matchups. And I think Michigan State's just given up, what, 9 offensive rebounds total in those mm-hmm. first two NCAA games combined. Mm-hmm. They can't afford Naz Reid to get in foul trouble. And Tremont Waters and Javonte Smart need to, you know, take wise shot selection, knowing that they're not really going to get many second chance opportunities. And this is a game that probably also is going to come down to the free throw line. It's going to be so close. I'm very interested to watch this one.
Yeah, I'm with you. Cassius Winston, one of the better point guards in the country. Describe what you saw out of him and what he does so well for Michigan State.
Well, he's very good at running that pick and roll offense. I think he's averaging close to 20 points per game right now, and everything kind of does flow through Cassius. You know, I guess I would compare him to a little bit more up tempo. I guess plays bigger than Andrew Nembhard plays for Florida. That's a guy, if you can get him into foul trouble and you can find a way to get him off his shot early on, then everything's got to kind of flow through the front court for Michigan State, and that's really you know, I guess Florida fans can say that they've seen probably one of the best Michigan State front court performances, so they're probably going to fear the worst, I think, in Nick Ward, and that's certainly something to watch. Nick Ward, his hand issue in that Sweet 16 game, if him and Tillman aren't hitting shots like they did in Gainesville, right, then it's certainly a very, very winnable game for the Tigers, because if you take Cassius out and you take that front court out, they're really not left with too much, considering the injury issues that team has had. I don't want to say that they're just two-dimensional, but there is a way to take Michigan State off their guard. It's not easy, but there is a way.
It was a 63-59 score when the Gators and the Spartans met. Was it just a bad shooting night, or was the defense that good?
Shot selection has just been a problem for Florida all season. I don't think Cassius Winston also had been a huge, huge factor at that point in the season. He's really a guy who came along a few weeks after that, honestly. If you go back and look at that, it's totally the front court. Florida was starting Keith Stone before he went down with that ACL injury, and Kavarius Hayes is very, very limited offensively, so they didn't get many second-chance points. And I think Ward and Tillman combined for more than 25 points against Florida, and that's just pretty much the difference factor. But the big thing for Florida that kept them in so many games down the line was their defense. And you saw that throughout mm-hmm. the season, even when they trimmed the rotation to just, you know, 7 guys that were playing around 30 minutes a game aside from the bench. That's what kept Florida in, and that was the key against Michigan State. But they didn't really have anything in the front court. They neutralized those guards. If I'm LSU, I go back and watch that Florida-Michigan State game just to see how to take Cassius Winston out of the game. And that was a freshman on him for most of the time. And Kevon Allen, his struggles have been well-documented, but he's a very, very outstanding defensive player. If I'm LSU, I think that I'm watching that game because, like you said, it's a familiar opponent. If you can scout the Gators, you can watch what they tried to do against Michigan State and then see what did and didn't work.
Yeah, I'm sure they have done that and done that often with the time that they've had off. Graham Hall of the Gainesville Sun, kind enough to talk to us. What do you see LSU? Look, LSU's bigger. You talked about rebounding. LSU's strength is their offensive rebound. Rebounding. Michigan State's strength is their defensive rebound. So something's going to have to give there. I agree with you 100%. Cavell, Bigby Williams, and Naz Reid for sure have got to stay out of early foul trouble. There's no question about that. Where do you see LSU with an advantage in this one?
I think it's got to be Naz Reid and obviously the guard play. If they can get Tremont Waters going early, if they can also the tempo for LSU, they're more of an up-tempo team, I think, than Michigan State, who often has relied on throwing it down in the front court and slowing it down. If that shot isn't there or they can't get an open three in the first, you know, 10, 15 seconds of the possession, if they can stop Michigan State getting out there in the break, and then if they can get back in transition against a pretty kind of, I don't want to call Michigan State slow, but they're by no means one of the quicker teams that, you know, LSU has played in the SEC. If you're playing in the SEC, if you've handled Tennessee, if you put up 80 points against that Florida defense, 77 points against that Florida defense, you kind of know how to tire these teams out. And obviously Nick Ward dealing with that hand injury and looking like he's going to play, I think that if you can play him physical, there's obviously some limitations with that. And that's where Naz Reid, who, as you guys have certainly seen, has been beat up all season down there. If he can match Ward really well, then I can see LSU easily getting a quick lead and keeping it, because Michigan State isn't a team that goes on huge runs.
Graham Hall, Gainesville Sun, kind enough to talk to us. So what was it about Florida that, you know, they won 2 out of 3 against LSU? What did the Gators take advantage of, in your opinion, to win those games? All three were close. The biggest difference was a 5-point win in Gainesville. But, I mean, the SEC tournament game was a 3-point game. It was a 1-point game in Baton Rouge. What was the difference, in your opinion?
Well, Florida was always getting Kevon Allen going, and that always started on defense for him. And that's really what kept Florida in it for much of the season when they had a chance, was defense. And LSU, they're one of the more physical teams in the SEC, but Florida matched them in many regards. And getting second-chance points and rebounding was huge, huge for Florida in both of those games. And they're going to have their hands full with, like I've said, Ward and Tillman. If they can get offensive rebounds against Michigan State, if they can get second-chance points, second-chance opportunities are going to tire out Michigan State. And the quicker that they can do that to their front-court players, the better shot that they're going to have. If they can get those guys tired or in foul trouble with 5-6 minutes left, the game's going to be decided at the free throw line, and you and I both know that LSU's got an advantage there. So I think that, you know, it's going to be hard, especially when you look at the coaching matchup for Benford, the matchup with Izzo, right? Because, again, you always got to be scared of Tom Izzo anytime you're this close in the season. But if they can get those guys in foul trouble, I really like LSU's odds.
Who would you put on Cassius Winston? Because Waters is so important to LSU. Winston's so important to Michigan State. You don't want to get either one of those in foul trouble. Do you put a Skylar Mays on him? What would you think?
I think Skylar Mays is, and he's had some streaky performances. I think the best way that you can get him kind of going is to have him have some good defensive sequences, and then maybe if he's not working out well on Cassius early, then you switch him off. But like you said, I think that's a guy who's got to start on Cassius. Is he their most athletic guy? I don't know, maybe in the backcourt, but that's the guy who's what? You got to remind me. Is he 6'5" or 6'6"?
Yeah, he's one of the bigger ones. Yes, much bigger than Waters.
So I would put him on there, and if not, then I think you have to certainly look at the guys who can rotate well on the perimeter. If that's what he's struggling with, and if they are struggling to get offensive rebounds or even defensive rebounds against LSU, then I think that you have to try and get him in foul trouble and drive the paint, and I think that's been one of LSU's strengths this year, is driving into the paint and getting other teams into foul trouble. That's something that Florida struggled with, certainly.
Graham Hall, Gainesville Sun. Okay, you got Kentucky versus Houston. You've got Auburn, North Carolina, Tennessee, Purdue, LSU, Michigan State. Who's the most vulnerable team, in your opinion, of those four SEC teams?
I really got to go with Tennessee, and I think they've kind of scared me for much of the NCAA tournament. I mean, Colgate you always got to worry about, a 15 seed coming out hot. But that was a 7-point game, and then they really were handed to it, I think, by Iowa there, and almost blew that huge lead. Mm-hmm. And you got to never really expect that Rick Barnes. I always expect him to make some mistake, and it's looked like they've almost made two big ones. I don't know if they really have what it takes to really go. Even though when we were sitting back here 6-8 weeks ago, it looked like Tennessee was made for the NCAA tournament, and now I'm kind of worried about them. I trust Calipari, and I trust this LSU team with a chip on their shoulder a little bit more right now, and we'll see if that comes to fruition, though.
The wild card is Auburn. If they're shooting shots and making them, they can beat anybody.
And
how long can they
keep
that streak going?
Yeah, that 10 in a row. You always think of teams like UConn who did struggle at times and then won that Big East tournament and then went on the run with Kemba Walker to win the NCAA championship.
Yeah.
But without Will Wade, and Benford's done a great job down there. I don't think anyone can take anything away from him. But what's going to get – if LSU gets all the way to the Final Four and then – or it's really anyone's game, it's going to be that chip on their shoulder. It's got them to this point, and I really don't think you can discount that because everyone's – kind of rooting against them. Don't you feel like that?
I feel that they are public enemy number one. I agree with you wholeheartedly. All right. Well, Graham Hall, thank you, buddy, for your insight. I think you're leaning toward LSU, and that might be a first for somebody that covers the Gators. How about that?
No bias here. I think it comes down to the free throw line, and I think that LSU pulls it out in a 4-point victory. I think that they have what it takes. I think that Tom Izzo is going to be a little frustrated. They've also been dealing with their own fair share of distractions over what some people will call coaching and some people will call screaming at a guy who has lost his confidence to play the game. And that's not what anyone wants to deal with right now when you're prepping for a Sweet 16 battle.
Graham, thank you for the time, buddy. Take care. We greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Jordy. My pleasure. Y'all take care down there. Good luck.
Graham Hall, Gainesville Sun, picking the Tigers over the Spartans.
Topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back. This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. You know what they say, in March, it's Tom Izzo time. Year after year after year, he rights the ship of the Michigan State Spartans, and of course, they have advanced to the Sweet 16. LSU, Michigan State in Washington, D.C. this Friday night, 6:09 Central Time tip. Let's find out more about the Spartans. Mike DeFabo writes sports features for the Lansing State Journal. Of course, Michigan State in East Lansing, Michigan. Mike, thanks for the time, buddy. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jordy. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Is this standard operating procedures in the minds of those that follow Michigan State basketball? This is what they expect?
Well, this definitely is what Michigan State fans and beat writers kind of expect out of Tom Izzo. But to be honest with you, the last couple years, people have been disappointed. The last couple years, Tom Izzo has had uncharacteristic early exits in March. They lost in the second round last season, the year before that, second round again. And the year before that, they were upset in the first round. You guys might remember that, the Middle Tennessee upset, the 15-2 matchup. So for the guys on the team right now, there's only one guy who was a redshirt player who had made it outside of the first weekend. So this was really a big weekend for Tom Izzo and the Spartans. So I think there's maybe a sense of relief a little bit that the pressure's off of them now, that they kind of got that monkey off their back and they're finally back in the second round of the tournament. But as you mentioned, Tom Izzo has a knack for getting to the Final Four. He knows how to do things here, so... Now it's up to Coach Izzo to see if he can maybe do it again and get back to his eighth Final Four.
Mike DeFabo, kind enough to join us. Okay, we got to talk about the Bradley game and the incident. If you sign up with Tom Izzo, you know what you're getting. I don't understand why people are in an uproar after he got after the freshman, Aaron Henry. That seems to me to be typical Tom Izzo. You're closer to the scene. What is the feeling? What are the people saying about that?
You know, it's kind of interesting. A couple days before the incident, I was talking with Aaron Henry, and, you know, he has been somebody that Tom Izzo has been critical of for good reason. He's a freshman who has had to step up in the absence of Josh Langford, one of their veteran players, and played much more than ever was expected out of him. And so he's been going through this all season, and not just him, anyone who plays for Michigan State has been, you know, what I would characterize as hard coaching. You know, I think that that's all it is. I don't think it's much more than that. But Aaron Henry, days before any of this happened, said, you know, my high school coach was just like this. He was the same way. I signed up for this because this is the way that I respond. I like a coach like this who demands excellence out of me and wants the best for me. And it was interesting that then this became kind of a national storyline when it blew up, because this is not uncommon. If you watch Michigan State basketball, you know, Coach Izzo is a hard-nosed, tough kind of coach. But I don't think this is uncommon. Even if you would probably go out to an LSU football practice, I'm sure this same thing happens. You know, if you go out to any number of different sporting events, this is the way that a lot of coaches still coach their players. I don't personally have a problem with it, as long as the players don't have a problem with it. But I don't know. I mean, I do see that there is a line, but I don't think that Tom Izzo came even close to approaching that line.
I'm with you. Mike DeFabo, kind enough to join us. You've had some really good some guards that have worn that green and white at Michigan State, but you got a pretty good one right now, Cassius Winston. What does Izzo say about him and how significant of a role he plays in the success of that ball club?
Yeah, today he described Cassius Winston as the straw that stirs the drink. And it's kind of funny in some ways, because Izzo is a very passionate guy, and obviously that got him in a little bit of trouble. But Cassius Winston is this steady, calm, unflappable guard, which is exactly what you want at the point guard position. And his biggest attribute, I would say, other than the fact that he stays calm under pressure, is he's an incredible passer. Michigan State coach Tom Izzo has described him as the best passer at Michigan State since Magic Johnson, which is saying something. And he's interesting because he's not very athletic. You know, he's not super fast. He's not incredibly quick. When you see him, he's not really strong. He has no real muscle definition. But he's just a really crafty player. He knows the game of basketball, knows how to get his teammates involved, and then when the situation comes, he can definitely create for himself as well.
And he's very good at calming his coach down a little bit, right? I mean, that leadership,
yep.
Right?
That's right, yeah. He's stepped up and become more of a leader, because he's more of a lead-by-example kind of guy. But now Michigan State has had a number of big-time injuries that they've had to go through this season, and more has been placed on Cassius Winston's shoulders. He's been handling it really well.
What have you seen? You've watched LSU play in this tournament. What are your initial thoughts of this matchup coming up?
Well, one big thing that interests me is just the rebounding, because yes, obviously LSU is an athletic team, and they do a tremendous job on the board, especially offensive rebounding. What I'm curious about is, you know, Michigan State is a team that also prides itself on rebounding. So you wonder who's going to win that matchup. But then, as you dive into that matchup a little bit more, I think LSU sends a lot of guys to the offensive board to try to get those second chance points, whereas Michigan State likes to run in transition. So that transition offense from Michigan State, I'm curious if they can take advantage of LSU's aggressive nature and maybe use it against them, where then, you know, Michigan State will get out in transition, get some easy baskets, because that is one thing about Tom Izzo teams. They love to run. You know, they love to push the ball in transition. Cassius Winston is the guy to do it for him.
Right.
So I'm curious about that for sure.
We've had a common opponent, obviously. Michigan State has played Maryland. LSU's played Maryland. You're two Big Ten teams. Tell me about the Michigan State-Maryland series this year. Tell me what you remember about it.
Well, it's interesting because Maryland has the big men kind of like Michigan State. Yeah. But I would say that Michigan State has better guard play. And also I would say, I don't think it's a hot take around the Big Ten to say Michigan State has better coaching than Maryland as well.
Yeah.
So I think that Michigan State, they have some similarities to Maryland. They both have good bigs. They both have athletic players. But Michigan is just a more refined version of Maryland, I would say. Both have issues turning the basketball over. That's going to be a big question mark in this game for Michigan State for sure. They turned the ball over 22 times against Minnesota, and I know LSU is good at forcing those turnovers, so that's a big question. But overall, I would just say, Maryland has for years been around the fifth best team in the Big Ten, kind of right around that point, whereas Michigan State has been the class of the Big Ten for years now. And once again, they won the Big Ten regular season and the Big Ten tournament. So Michigan State just clicking at a higher level.
69-55, you beat them in the regular season. Did you play them more than once or just once?
It was just the one time this season.
Yeah.
The Big Ten expanded to from 18 to 20 games this season in conference play. And that's really something that Michigan State has had to survive. You know, they've dealt with a number of injuries because it was a brutal Big Ten season. So they play 20 games, whereas most conferences only play 18 now. Then they play three games in the Big Ten tournament and win that. Then they play another Big Ten team, Minnesota. So I'm sure that Michigan State players are looking forward to playing someone outside of their conference for once.
Yeah. LSU, Michigan State, Friday night in Washington, D.C. Such a great history in that program. I'm sure the fans will travel and travel quite well to D.C. for this upcoming regional.
Oh, yeah, without question. Michigan State fans, you can find them pretty much all over the country at this point. So I think that it'll be a loud environment. I'm sure it'll be a good game, too. I think LSU will give them a run for their money. We'll have to see what ends up happening here on Friday night.
We know about Cassius Winston. We know about an offensive rebounding team that likes to run. Who is, when you need a big shot and they guard Cassius Winston and he needs an outside shot, who's your go-to guy?
I would say the go-to shooter is Matt McQuaid. He's about a 6'6 wing player from Texas. He grew up watching Michigan State, though, because his dad's from Michigan. And he has evolved as his career has gone on. He was a guy who maybe didn't have a lot of confidence early in his career, even though he had what some people described as one of the best pure shooting motions of any high school player at the time. But he's a guy now that he will hit big shots. He had, I think, 27 points in the Big Ten championship game in the tournament. And he's also evolved as a defensive guy. So I'm curious who Michigan State will choose to guard Waters, whether it's going to be Matt McQuaid, who's the 6'6 guy, or whether Cassius Winston, the point guard, is not really too much of a defensive guy. So I'm kind of curious on that matchup if the Spartans will choose to put McQuaid on Waters or what they'll do there.
And to your point, I'm curious to see what LSU's going to do as far as who's going to guard Cassius Winston. Tremont Waters so valuable, you can't get him in foul trouble. I'm very curious to see what LSU does there. If I mention the word Indiana, do you cringe? How the heck did you guys lose twice to Indiana?
It's bizarre because Indiana, pretty much the only time that they've played well has been against Michigan State.
Yeah,
Michigan State lost twice to IU. And, IU had a little bit of a weird season. They've got a five-star guy who's probably going to be a lottery pick in Romeo Langford. Another guy, Juwan Morgan, who's a forward. He's one of the best players in the Big Ten. And somehow they had this terrible, terrible season where things just fell off the rails for them. But seemingly the only time that they played well was against Michigan State. And it very nearly cost Michigan State the Big Ten title or a share of the Big Ten title. They had to get a little bit of help from Purdue in the final week of the season to put things back together. What I would recommend to LSU, maybe throw on a couple Hoosier jerseys because there's something about them that, Michigan State just doesn't play well against them.
Seven-game winning streak for the Spartans. Maryland threw up a 3-2 zone that really stymied LSU. But Izzo, there is no zone in Izzo, is there?
No. I think it's against his religion. And all they do is that hard nose in your face kind of defense. So it'll be a different kind of style for sure. Michigan State, they do what they do. They rely on rebounding, running, physical, hard nose, tough play. So they do what they do, and then they kind of just we'll see if they can see if LSU can beat them at their own game.
What do teams do? You haven't lost many games, and we mentioned Indiana. There was a stretch where you lost three in a row in Big Ten play. But what did those teams do effectively to beat Michigan State, or was it just Michigan State had a bad shooting night?
It was a combination of a couple of things. So the first one they lost was to Purdue, and shot the ball well. And Michigan State has a bad habit of getting off to really bad starts. And so that was another example where Michigan State got themselves in a hole, kind of came into the game a little bit lackadaisical, and then by the time they turned it on, it was too late. So that's one recipe would be if you get off to a fast start against Michigan State. The second loss that they had in a row in that three-game stretch was to Indiana. And Indiana, as I mentioned, they were a terrible three-point shooting team, and all of a sudden they went off from three-point range. So, you know, if they encounter a team that maybe shoots a little unexpectedly well, which is kind of what Bradley did in the first half against them, making 6 of 9 three-pointers in the first half, that could be a problem. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was Illinois. Illinois plays a really up-and-down style of basketball. They're one of the most unique teams in the Big Ten in that department. Because you think of the Big Ten, you think more teams that grind out possession.
Right, right. Well, LSU wants to get up and down the floor. You say Michigan State likes to run out of their defense and push the pace. Should be a really good one. You know, I know, this is only the second time these two teams have met. They've both been in the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. You guys got us pretty good back when you had that guy named Irvin Magic Johnson and Greg Kelser and Jay Vincent and that group. So we'll see if this group of Tigers can beat that group of Spartans. I like the old Spartan team better than this current one. You got Hall of Famers on that old team, man. So maybe LSU has a shot here. We'll see. All right, there you go. Mike DeFabo. Mike, thank you so much for your time. Yeah, that was back in 1979, and Magic and company en route to a national championship where they played up against Larry Bird and Indiana State, and that kind of was the highest, still to this day, the highest-ranked college basketball game in the history of college basketball on television. And, of course, those two would resume it and really ignite the NBA with the Lakers and the Celtics. So, again, LSU, Michigan State, Friday night in Washington, D.C., 6:09 tip, 5:30 pregame show, and then the call of the game right here on 103.7 The Game. You better get your hard hat on. Michigan State's not going to let you get away. They're going to keep battling and keep battling. LSU's going to have to make it a 94-foot game, I think. If it slows down to a half-court game, don't like it. If it's up and down the floor, I like it. Put the ball in Waters' hands and let's roll. Let's roll. All right, we'll take a timeout. Come back, wrap up this hour of the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 1037 The Game.
All right, here we go. Wrapping things up. Thursday edition. Brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon. You know where it is by now. I-10, the Henderson-Cecilia exit in the beautiful town of Brobridge, Louisiana. It's right there. You can't miss it. Got the little state capital right there, D.C.'s little capital, Exxon. It's got everything you need. First off, you can gas up, cleanest restrooms you'll find anywhere, and they've got everything under the sun for your traveling party, whatever they're palate is desiring, whatever they're hankering for, they've got it there. They really do. Gift items, all kind of stuff. Now, when you walk in, if you head to the far right, you'll see that Soul Food Deli. And it's a true one. It's legit. It is a legit, true Soul Food Deli. And you know they got good stuff. So on Friday, they're going to have the catfish, the fried shrimp. They're going to have all that stuff. Hey, if it doesn't matter to you, cheeseburgers, top shelf. Top shelf. We've got everything. DC's Little Capital Exxon. It's a store within a store within a store. I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Well, we've got NCAA tournament play tonight. And we've got LSU baseball again right here on 103.7 The Game. 6 o'clock first pitch, so 5:30 pregame show. Woo, LSU. Not a hotter team in the country than Mississippi State. So buckle up and let's wait and see what happens. Their backs are against the wall. We'll see how they fight, how they come out of this thing. But we'll have it for you. All right. History lesson time. So you got to figure this time of the year, March, there's going to be some basketball-related thing. And we go back to the year, to the day, March 28th, the year 1992. Let me set this up for you. Duke versus Kentucky in the NCAA tournament. Duke calls timeout, trailing Kentucky 103-102 with 2.1 seconds left to go. You know what they call it. You know, they have Montana, right, to Clark for the catch. Well, this is Hill to Leitner for the shot.
A quick pass to half court and call a quick timeout so they can get in better shooting range.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes!
Vern Lundquist with the call. Grant Hill, they never guarded him, throwing the ball out of bounds. Now everybody does. An unobstructed pass. Leitner catches it, wheels, deals, and delivers. Knocks out Rick Pitino and the Wildcats, and Duke would go on to win a national championship several games later. On this day, March 28th, the year 1992. Man, still to this day, one of the greatest college basketball games I've ever seen. Sean Woods was a Kentucky Wildcat. Jamal Mashburn. Sean Woods, the head coach at Southern University in Baton Rouge. Jamal Mashburn, what a player, right? What a game. What a game. Yes, indeed. All right, birthday wishes. If today, March 28th, is your special day, well, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share with the likes of the quarterback for the Oakland Raiders. Happy 27th birthday, Derek Carr. And he's made a lot of good movies, but my favorite had to be Wedding Crashers. Happy 48th birthday to Vince Vaughn. I loved him in that movie. That's one of those classics. I loved it. So happy birthday to them. Happy birthday to you. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. Keep adding year after year after year to it. Yeah, baseball is in the air. Opening day. Well, it's really the second opening day. But really, here in the States, it's opening day. You got to love that. This is when all the sports converge. We've got the NBA playoffs about to start. March Madness about to wrap up. Baseball's just opening up. We got the Masters coming up. The Run for the Roses and the Kentucky Derby coming up. It's a great time. It really is a great time. Special thanks to our guest, Winston Alexander, for his live report from Starkville, Mississippi. John Brady, we went up to our nation's capital in D.C. for him. Graham Hall, we went down to Florida for the Gainesville Sun. LSU has played Florida has played LSU and Michigan State. We got his perspective on all of that. And a special thanks to our correspondent giving us the very latest, Mike DeFabo from the Lansing State Journal, and his update on Michigan State. Should be a great one. Really should be. Man, I hope we can be talking about the Tigers at this time next week. Wouldn't that be something? And I'm just here to tell you, if we are, I'm heading to Minneapolis. Because that means we're in the Final Four. It would be a huge undertaking, but stranger things have happened. Let's just see. It's a simple game, baby. You can talk about this, talk about that. Put the ball in the basket. Put the ball in the basket. CD, you're the best. You are the best. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Until tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.